We are live, coming at you from the 60712. It is the J3 Amateur Hour Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to the J3 Amateur Hour Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan. I'm here with
Yoel.
Josh cannot make it tonight, so we also have a special guest host out tonight.
Another J.
That would be me, John Blumberg.
John, welcome.
It is really a distinct pleasure and honor to be here.
Okay, before I introduce our guest, I want to first make something clear. A lot of this, what we're doing tonight, it's a little off script tonight, and we have a fun guest, but also this came about because of discussions about food, specifically in a great restaurant chat that is administered by Yoel.
I am one of the administrators of
it. You are one of the admins, yes. But Jeremy Kroll created the chat.
Yes.
So shout out to him. And before...
Well, I am only an administrator because I did leave. I had a little hiatus. Calm down. And part of the negotiation of me coming back was becoming an administrator of the chat.
Thanks, Yoel. Okay. We have a very special guest, and he will be joining us to discuss a lot of things, among them food-related items, as he is a great chef himself. His name is Moshe Aaron Blonder.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show.
It's a great pleasure.
Okay. Blonder is from Brooklyn. We're going to get into his background, his life stories, family history, okay, going back generations. That will come. However, right now, he's a food expert. On Sunday, was it Sunday or Monday? I think it was Monday.
I think it was Sunday.
On Sunday, was that for real? Did you go to the East Coast on a food exploration tour, or did you have another reason to be there?
That is 100% factual.
Okay, so why don't you describe for the audience, just so they could tell them what you did Sunday, what your day was like.
Okay, woke up in the morning. I had said already, I heard a couple, a week or two prior to this, that there was a pizza store that opened up in Lakewood, New Jersey, Howell, New Jersey, called Tuscany. And I said, okay. The guy told me, he said, this is the best pizza. It tastes exactly like Big Apple Pizza in town. I said, that's crazy, because if that's what it tastes like, Yoel, hold off on your comments. I got to need to taste this. So I told my wife already a week before, I said, I'm going to go into Lakewood. My wife was out of town for a couple of days. Come Sunday morning, I've got some guests staying at one of my houses in New Jersey. And, sorry.
Flex noted. That's
great flex.
It's a chesed house. And
huge flex.
Huge. Yeah. Even bigger.
My wife, who is tremendously, you know, wants to make sure that everything is perfect for any guest staying there, says, you know, we need to get this, we need to get that, and we got to make sure that things are, you know, perfectly well. I said, perfect, I can go in. I can go to Home Goods, get some side tables, get this, get that, some tablecloths for the 180-foot table that we have in the 180 inches. It's very hard to get a 180-inch tablecloth, apparently. And I called up Elegant Linen, and they told me they've got one for me. I said, hold it for me. I'll be there in a couple hours. I booked a flight right then and there and headed off to the airport. And the thought process was I was going to get all this done by get there at 4 o'clock, 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, get everything done, and then go on a food crawl. Of course, it's Sunday. It's negative 25 degrees here. Planes are not leaving, start get delayed, get to Philadelphia airport, didn't want to go to Newark, there were no flights, then there was a flight, and I said, it was just too expensive, I said, let me just stick with Philly. So I went to Philly, rented a car, drove to Lakewood, got delayed, some traffic, showed up at 5 o'clock or so, and I had a mission. I had to go and get everything. Because my wife said, oh, the next day, maybe you can stay late and, you know, take care of all the stuff. I said, no, I'm getting everything done tonight. Every store closes by 6 o'clock. Between 5 and 6 o'clock, I got everything done. Tablecloths, towels, 6 bedside tables. I went into Home Goods, got everything stuffed into this tiny little Mazda CX-9, 16 different bedside tables. En route to that, I went to Tuscany. Walked in there, had one slice. It was, eh. It was okay, but I walked in. I started having a conversation with the guy. It was okay. It was, you know, decent.
Is the guy who told you that it's like the greatest, is usually a great...
You know, I didn't trust him that much. He's from Chicago.
Oh.
But he does have a house in Jackson, New Jersey, and he knows a little bit about food, but It was good. Don't get me wrong. It was a good slice of pizza, but it wasn't, you know, something that would, you know, blew my mind. But I could see, based on their pizza, that they had the ability to get to greatness. So, you know, everything looked like it should be great. Then I start heading back to my house, and I'm like, okay, I got to go to this, like, Sfarim store and pick up, like, 15, like, Shabbos lamps and stuff like that.
Okay, let's stick with the food, though.
Longer. I stop off, and I go.
I know about all this chesed stuff.
I stop off, and I go to Upper Crust Pizza, and I just go, can I get a slice of pizza? Now, mind you, at Tuscany, I told the guys, I announced myself that I came in from Chicago to taste this slice of pizza. Three guys came in and sat down next to me, like, are you crazy? I said, yeah. I am a little bit. Anyway, stopped off at this place called Upper Crust. Again, slice of pizza was, that one was just delicious. Easily a point and two higher than Tuscany. And then I headed home. And that's when I continued the food crawl, you know, ordering from multiple different
Where?
Places.
Can you name the places?
I ordered from Mike's Chicken. I got a monster, legitimate 12-inch sub that I made myself with anything and everything that I wanted. No extra charge for any side dressings.
Noted.
Unfortunately, they forgot the side dressings, so I had to order again some hot poppers, and then I called them and I told them, send me 15 side dressings. I ended up getting, 10 minutes later, they show up at my house with these Mike's hot poppers with about 25 dressings. Now, they know this because they know my name, and about 2 years ago, I made a huge stink because they had a very bad delivery experience. So it's noted in their system is what the guy told me. Make sure this guy is happy.
Okay.
I then went with Nostalgia, and I could go through the list.
What's Nostalgia?
Nostalgia is a very interesting place. A guy opened up, probably some Hasidic guy, you know, some guy from, you know, Williamsburg or Brooklyn or Bar, you know, someplace over there that moved to Lakewood, Toms River, and decided he's going to open up a restaurant that gives you nostalgia. So any day of the week, 99% of the time, you can get anything you want from literally chalent to, I mean, the craziest types of chicken that you would have as a little kid. You know, real old school Heimish food.
Tofutti Cuties?
You cannot get a Tofutti Cutie there now.
That's the only thing that brings me back.
And, you know, gefilte fish. You can get a piece of freaking gefilte fish. I mean, like, but you know, as a dish and everything.
With a carrot?
With a carrot.
Okay.
With a little thing of chrein on the side.
So what'd you get there?
Well,
what didn't he get? Let's start with that.
You can go down the list. I mean, you'd have to go and check it. But I got kishka with gravy. I got some chalent. I got some type of chicken. I forget the name. It's some Hungarian name, Papishkan chicken or something like that. You can get chalupchis.
So are you taking
over here in Chicago?
Are you taking one bite and then just going on to the next one? Are you eating the whole thing?
Yeah, here and there, I'm taking a bite. You know.
Do you have to like go throw up, come back?
Did not
so,
do that
so route. Let me get this straight, because I thought you were there from the morning, but you hit four restaurants, you know, already in the late afternoon, nighttime.
Yeah, literally.
But doesn't food get worse when you're not hungry anymore? Like, were you forcing yourself to eat it
I'm the type of foodie that I don't eat a lot. I eat a little of everything that's good. So that's really what it comes down to, and I think that's the most important piece to really understand food is, you know, any big fat chazer can start and destroy a slice of a pie of pizza and say, oh, this is delicious, or a huge, you know, 12-inch sub and a steak and a this and a that, whatever you're going to go down the list, sweetbreads, et cetera, et cetera.
We have a special guest host. First of all, John. John is one of the biggest fans of the podcast. He's a great friend
of
y'all's.
Yes.
and Josh's, I think, up until
Josh's,
tonight.
Josh's, yes, perhaps. First of all, John, we're sitting in this beautiful abode.
Yes.
On Central Park. Tell us about what your experience has been like with Yoel moving to Lincolnwood.
I'd say it's been a game changer. I mean, the neighborhood definitely got some vibrancy when he came in and, you know, a shot in the arm. There have been a lot of people that I was very good friends within the hood that left. They went further north to Skokie over the years, and getting Yoel here was a very, very welcome and needed addition, I'd say.
Well, the way my son described it, John was close to ending it all before I got here, and it brought him back to life.
I would totally disagree with that, but because I love bits, and I think Noam is Yoel Jr. I'm gonna just go with it. It's awesome. Yeah. Sure. I was gonna end it. Yoel saved me.
Okay. And Blonder.
Yes.
We have a special guest host. We don't have Rosen tonight, which is fine. You're not missing much. But do you and John actually know each other?
Yes.
Can we get in? You do?
Absolutely.
Can you describe how you guys know each other?
Many drunken sit-downs with a mutual friend of ours who cannot control his alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't think that cuts it down.
Do you know, like, his... I mean, obviously, you guys know each other by face. Maybe you know your first names and stuff like that. But would you say you know, like, his family and everything like that? Are you intimate in that way?
No, not really. I mean, I met his wife once, had an experience with an enraged experience. So leave it at that. What? I blocked her in a restaurant, and she called 911 on my car.
No way. First of all, what restaurant?
Yeah.
It was Nouveau.
Nouveau, and you blocked her in. Oh, and she worked there.
Next door.
Her business is there.
She was looking all over, claims that she came into the store looking for a bunch of people and looking for whoever it is. And, you know, I was an idiot. I didn't realize.
You're from New York.
And she's a nice person, but.
You can double park where you want to
yeah,
go.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And she gave it to me. Really, really. It was embarrassing.
Do you feel it was deserved?
Absolutely.
Okay. Did you go inside the store and make a couple purchases to make it up?
You know, not necessarily, but you know.
Okay, so Blonder, now that, okay, you know John loves Yoel. Let's get to you.
Wait, Jordan, you know, I also, even though you didn't make the cut for Yoel's birthday dinner, I also do have very strong affectionate feelings towards you as well.
No, John.
This is beautiful.
John, it's a little embarrassing, but I have very affectionate feelings for you as well.
Thank you. Let's get back to the show, boys.
Okay. Blonder, you are from Brooklyn.
Yes.
Your family's not from Brooklyn. I'll tell you how your father got to Brooklyn. He biked 165 miles. Well, it was covered in the Williamsburg News on September 2nd, 1960. Your family came from abroad, and we'll get into that, but...
It was actually his brother, but yes.
I disagree. Is your dad's name Moritz?
That's my uncle.
Oh, okay, fine. But Ingber, what is it? What's your father's name?
Ingar.
Okay, so you
he was involved in the craziness, don't get me wrong.
So apparently based on news reports which were covered in Brooklyn, upstate New York, and also oddly Long Beach, California, the newspaper had the same article, is that your grandparents could only send one of their children to Tor Vidas. They could only afford one tuition.
Yeah.
So the brother, apparently your uncle, decided to bike from Troy to Brooklyn and beseech them to let him in.
From where?
Troy, New York. I don't know where that is. Upstate New York?
Upstate?
By Albany or something?
Even further.
Even further than Albany.
I mean, this is very impressive. Even, like, there's no map code. Did he use a map, I assume? Like, there's no map quest.
It says that he slept in an alley overnight. And by the way, the craziest thing, because it's, like, obviously what, a very, like...
Was this, like, right before the school year? Was this, like, August time?
Yeah, it's, like, it's late August. But the wildest thing is that, like, his parents were fine with this. It says they met up on the way or something, and he told them, it's fine, I could get there.
Yeah. Again, it's a different generation. I mean, this was... My uncle was... He passed away a couple of years ago, but he was a crazy man like that.
You know, what time of year was he biking?
He was a guy that drove his car, his 1967 Betsy, over 1 million miles, drove to Alaska, hit deer along the way. I mean, he was just an interesting fellow.
So you think they were like dealing with his son and, you know, they just knew this is part of his personality. He needs to do it.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's what happened at that time.
The article says he rode all night Sunday and all day Monday through a torrential downpour and arrived in Brooklyn late Monday evening. Early Tuesday morning, he presented himself before the registrar of the school, Rabbi Aaron Braun, after sleeping in an alley near the school.
Please tell me they let him in.
They let him in. They waived tuition.
Yeah.
Maybe his parents were in on it. They thought it was a good ploy.
You know, it's funny. I never got to meet my grandfather, my grandmother. I actually lived by her for a bunch of years. But again, another interesting experience, you know, as a little kid going there every Shabbos. But yeah, definitely very, very different generation. We're talking about Europeans, you know, had a whole, they came right off the boat back then. This is in the 1950s.
Yeah, 1959, 1960. Yeah. So
and Jordan back. I was going to say, as a father, can you imagine, and I assume this is going into, what, ninth grade or?
Yeah, he was. He well, the brother that how old he biked was 17.
17. So imagine your 17-year-old son is, okay, I'm biking to New York, 160 miles, and obviously there's no cell phones or there's no communication really. Like, I mean, you're a father. Can you just imagine? Like, I don't know.
No, clearly I cannot. It's a rhetorical question. Obviously, in today's day and age, this
John
is shocking to anyone.
John's old enough.
Only even close thing I can think of is that my parents let me, Ben Amrami, and Elliot Alvear drive to Vail, Colorado on Christmas Eve when we were 16 with no cell phones, no maps.
I mean, that's legit.
And we had like a... Like one of those maps you open up with a line on it.
John, the only thing I could guess was something going on in the family in those days?
There was always something going on in the family.
Wait, John, what was the plan of communication?
There
in
was
other words,
none.
Like, when I get there, I'll call you or not
Alvear,
even?
Alvear's mom, I think she should rest in peace. I think it was like, Elio, you got to call home. In Spanish, you got to call home like every 50 feet, basically, you know. But there was no plan. And we got a flat tire.
My father sent me when I was 15 years old. He basically, they didn't know what to do with me as a teenager.
That's shocking.
And they said, you're going to Israel in the summertime to my brother's house. Or I had a couple brothers that were there, one or two. And my father sent me on a Turkish Air flight with a stopover in Istanbul. I had never been on a plane before in my life.
What year are we talking
and a
about?
This is going back to... I was 15, so this is 25 years ago. So,
are you 40?
39. Okay. This was before 98, 99, something like that. And I had a $5 calling card, and my father, I think, gave me 20 bucks, literally. And I show up in Istanbul airport. I don't even remember this. This is just through the haze of a lot of things as a teenager. And I show up in Istanbul airport, and my plane somehow was delayed or something like that. And I'm like, oh God, what am I supposed to do? Like, I don't even know how to use this calling card. I've never used a calling card before. And I somehow figured out a way to call my parents and like tell them I'm stuck in Istanbul. They're like, figure it out. You know, I slept in like the airport, like on in like one of these benches, you know, one of these seats in the terminal for like a couple hours. I had no food. I had nothing. I had literally 20 bucks to my name. And which was like 600 million lira, and I could get like a Diet Coke for that, you know, something. And but that's, you know, that's what it was, and like figured it out. I guess I don't even remember when I got to Israel. Was I supposed to call somebody? And you know, this was that generation back then that they would allow us to do certain things. Today we would never allow our kids to do that. You know,
yeah, when I went to Israel for the first time, you know, I was 17. But basically, I told my parents, I said, okay, I assume I'm going to get there okay. If something happens to the plane, I'm sure you'll hear about it in the news. And then, so the first time I spoke, and this is like before Elul, so like that I called my parents, I decided to call them between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. I did not call them before Rosh Hashanah, called them before Yom Kippur. And I think the first question was, is everything okay? Why are you calling?
Right.
So that was just like, that was how the that's how we were. I mean, just, you know, they assume everything is good unless they hear otherwise, which is like opposite of today. Because nowadays, or maybe it could be, you know, depending on the way people grow up. But, you know, now it's like, okay, everything is wrong unless I hear from you every 20
right.
minutes.
Right.
Okay. So Blonder, and your father, as you mentioned, came from Europe. He was born in Switzerland, but his parents were not actually Swiss. His father was German. Cantor Herman Blonder. His mother was actually born in Sweden. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
Okay. Have you ever visited the Wasserberger family in Tampa, Florida?
I have not.
Do you know your grandfather's cousin only passed away in 2016? Sala, the wife of Alfred Wasserberger. You never went to see her?
I know the name Sala.
You went to Lakewood to eat at four restaurants. You couldn't visit the people that took him in upon his arrival in America. All these articles.
There is a guy that keeps reaching out to me.
Let me ask his name. Abe Wasserberger. Is this his picture right here?
I don't know.
He's the guy on Ancestry.
Yes, I think so. Somebody keeps... I'm trying. He keeps on reaching out to me to say that, you know, he knew my grandfather and he wants to connect with me in Florida or something like that.
Yeah, Tampa.
I wasn't sure if he's some like person from like, you know, India, you know, trying to like, you know, scam me or something. But then I did reach out on the family group, and they said, yeah, one of my other brothers has been getting the same message from this guy. So right. We do have to connect at
some
point.
So they did take in your grandfather, stayed by them a little bit in Tampa, and their grandmother was a blonder.
Little known fact, my grandfather got a shteller when he was my grandfather was a chazan, a cantor, where they davened, and back then a cantor, a chazan, davened every single tefillah the entire year, every single day. And and he was German and in Switzerland. So there was a lot of the community. There was always, you know, these people back then, they were so stuck up with everything. If you did something different than what they were used to, it was a very, you know, hostile environment at times. And eventually he had to leave. He was a chazan, a sheikhet, a mayel, a cipher, and a rebbe. They called him the Alamensch back then. And he ended up in, I believe, in Tampa. And I can't confirm this by memory.
I can.
Yes.
Because
he left because it was my grandmother waited for him till she was older because she was very, very frum. She was the only frum person in Sweden in her city, and she didn't want to get married to somebody that was not religious. So she waited till she was much older. And anyway, he got a job in a shul that was a reform temple. He didn't know about it. And he got there and he said, I'm out. I'm not taking this job. And then he ended up in Troy, and then eventually, I believe they ended up in Columbus. Then they ended up in Columbus, Ohio, is where they.
That's right. Cantor Blonder, actually, it says that he, in the Tampa, there's a picture of him here with his cousin Alfred Wasserberger, whose dear son has been reaching out to Blonder and getting no response. And it talks about his arrival from Switzerland and says that Cantor Blonder has performed in, he's lived in Norway, Sweden, Finland, England, most recently in Switzerland. He's a famed chazan, and, you know, you continue that tradition, Mish.
Yes.
I know people are aware of that, except that for some reason the local shuls here have not been willing to utilize your services for the high holidays. Can you please give your thoughts on
that's
where that
incorrect.
Is? Oh, KJBS?
Well, this
Jazz
year.
Or the old KJBS?
This year.
Well, the still-standing KJBS.
Still-standing.
Doesn't want to lay down.
How was that experience, Jonathan?
It was moving. It was a beautiful davening.
It really was. The first day actually was a little rough because it was just, I got no help or anything like that. It moved, and it was really my kids, obviously davening with my kids. It was a big decision because, yes, it's unfortunate. There is it's a loss on their part. You know, I davened for 10 plus years, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur in New York in a shul with a lot of young guys. And it was an incredible experience for me. I've davened my entire life for the Amud ever since I can remember. Unfortunately, you know, there's just some people that don't appreciate it. I think they just don't understand it.
Do you think it's something about you that they don't like?
It's possible.
Do your legs get tired?
My legs do not get tired, ever.
Do people have to help you up after you bow for Atlenu?
God forbid.
Okay, so Blonder, so you're a chazan, your family came from Europe. Your father, his brother, biked to Tor Vadas. You grew up in an area called Kensington.
Oh, gosh.
Okay, so not Flatbush.
That's right.
Not Borough Park. What was Kensington like?
Kensington was and still remains.
Careful, because I have cousins there.
Okay.
Go on. No, please.
I don't know what it is today as much anymore. I think there's a lot more Hasidim that moved in there. But it was a poor, just downtrodden neighborhood of people of great faith and very simple. That's what I would call it. It was a very simple upbringing, extremely simple. Most people around us were very poor, whether it be they were kollel or rabbeim or whatever it may be, they had jobs that were not successful, whatever it was a place that had no real identity. You either lived in Borough Park or in Flatbush growing up in Brooklyn. That was the concept. You know, when I went to yeshiva, it was, where are you from? Either from Borough Park or you're from Flatbush. And
I was always told they're from Brooklyn. They never said Kensington.
Right.
So,
did people look down on you if you were from Kensington?
I don't know if they looked down on us. It was just, we had our own feelings of like, we're just like, nishtahi, nishtaher, you know, we're like chelm. It was a very, that was what we, that was what we thought our, you know, ourselves.
It's like the Peterson Park of Chicago, right?
Like the Whipple, yeah, that type of
Peterson Park.
Yeah,
the old days,
maybe. But it was a very simple upbringing, and I have a lot of appreciation to it and for it, because I'm still a simple person in terms of that, in that regard of, we just didn't, I don't have much needs, you know. If I got food on my table, do I love food? Do I love other things? You know, here and there I do, but really food is my main love in terms of that stuff. We didn't have it, and it was just not something that we really ever thought about. I don't have the, you know, I like to be comfortable, but that's, it's not, I don't have the hasagas that some other people have, like, you know, Yoel, for example.
Let's talk about those. What Fair. Are those?
So growing up there, let me ask you, so your love of food...
We had no food.
You had no food. But let me ask you this. On Fridays, which pizza store did you go to?
In Mendelssohn's.
Not Netanya?
Well, that was later on in life. That was later on in life.
Okay, let's get back to that. Because I've got some comments on that.
Wait, I'm trying to picture his childhood. So, and how many children are in the family?
We're, Kanine are 11 of us.
11, and what number are you in the lineup?
Seven.
Okay, so they're beginning to give up on, like, the last,
life.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying, right, they usually parents. Were your parents
older?
My parents are older. My father's, Kanine, are almost, 79. He was born in 46, February 46. Birthday's coming up soon. It was a very, very, what were you asking now just before?
Well, I mean, like, were you really parented, or after, like, the first couple kids?
They sent him to Turkey at 15. Yeah.
No, I was the second part of the family. So, you know, we had my older brother at certain times. My younger siblings never even knew my older brother. He was in Israel by the time he was 18 years old, whatever it was. There were kids that weren't even born yet. Didn't know who he was. He was, you know, he came in for a wedding here and there. You know what I mean? That type of situation. So I was the oldest of the younger four.
Okay, so two separate families. And then your parents sent you off to some yeshiva or something growing up?
Yeah.
You stayed locally in Brooklyn?
No. So I stayed locally in Brooklyn, and I don't remember a lot of it. It was just a lot of just haze, you know. Just
did you make it through?
Let's cut to the chase. What went wrong in the yeshiva system for you?
Did you make it through eighth grade in the same school?
I did. I graduated. Okay. I graduated high school after 2 years, ninth and tenth grade.
Okay, hold on. So eighth grade, you made it through fine.
Made it through fine.
Elementary school, you're good.
Elementary school, I was always able to get out of the, you know, I was a troublemaker, but I was, I was in the same school.
And then you went to a place called Tiferes Elimelech?
Correct. That's where I went for elementary, and I went there for high school, ninth and tenth grade. Actually, I think I stayed there for 11th also. But at that point, I was already gone. I wasn't really interested in going. But ninth and 10th grade, I went in there, and I went to graduated high school after 10th grade, took all my regents in 2 years. Actually failed in the 10th grade summer. I went to a camp called Silver Lake, and I failed my regent, one of my math regents. At the time, there were three math regents. My father, I believe, yanked me out of summer camp, Silver Lake, and said, you're getting back to the bungalow, and you're going to go and study for this and pass the test again. I think I took it again. I think I got a 66 on it. But he
is that a passing grade? Out.
Yeah, 66 was passing. Yeah.
Okay. Wait, what
sounds so good?
What percentage is, if you got a 66, what percentage correct is that?
65 out of 100 it was passing in New York.
What, if you can put that in a fraction, do you know what 66, if you scored a 66?
I'm terrible at math.
John.
I'm going to go with 2/3.
There you go.
There you go. All right. A little approximately, a little less, because it's really 66 and 2/3.
There you go.
But
Looks like you did good. Yeah. All right.
Yoel was in the highest math class.
Okay, so for some reason you finished high school in 2 years. Very foreign to me. What happened there? Was there some type of problem with the system? Was there abuse going on? Was there... drugs, alcohol. What was the story?
I mean, listen. There was a lot of things going on when we were younger, but the most important thing was that I really went to a school and a yeshiva that I wasn't necessarily, I wasn't the same as everybody else there, and it was that simple. So I was doing my own thing. I was having a good time in life, running around with friends, and going to Netanya. Let's say, you know, getting some delicious pizza.
What happens in Netanya?
It was just a fun place. It was just... That's
a restaurant.
What went
us?
Down upstairs in Netanya?
I think we're going to leave that off here.
Shout out. Shout out Dr. Brenner for giving me some good
research. I was going to ask you, where you getting all your
info? What do I know from Natanya?
No, I understand that.
I got to tell you, by the way, Natanya Pizza, and you can ask anybody that that's ever been, you know, going back then, that pizza was the best pizza that existed.
And that's in just where? Flatbush? Or?
It was, yeah, it was in Flatbush. It was right next to, it was on East 15th Street between, on M between 15th and 16th. On J, sorry. And,
wasn't Pizza Time down the block?
Right down the block, two blocks down.
You don't
down.
Think that was better?
No.
He mentioned Mendelssohn's. I mean,
Mendelssohn's. Tell us about Mendelssohn's. What could you get there that you can't get in Chicago?
You can get a slice of pizza back to when we were younger, a slice of pizza and a punch for 99 cents.
Was it hot?
It was piping hot, and it
Wait,
was
what
so
kind of
good.
Punch? Like the kind of
red
was in that,
punch,
like,
yeah.
That thing that like
yeah.
never stopped spinning?
Yes, yes. Uh-huh.
Sounds yes, good.
And then they burnt down the store and, you know, got a nice insurance claim and built a big, huge monster store.
We have a new segment for the podcast.
It's called Question of the Day.
It's called Question of the Day.
And who's
today's
sponsored
Question
by?
Of the Day is brought to you by the inaugural
segment.
New segment of the Question for the Day, Yoel's Question of the Day, is brought to you by Fitch Property Group, LLC, representing a beautiful property at 5938 West Fullerton. Downstairs is a horoscope gallery, which is in the basement unit. And there are plenty of vacancies on upper floors available for your rental needs now. It's in the beautiful Belmont Central neighborhood. For all questions and inquiries, please contact the J3 Amateur Hour podcast and we'll put you in touch with the property manager. Okay, now, Yoel, for the question of the day.
Today's question of the day actually revolves around towels. And so my question to John, I know you're unprepared for this.
Very much so.
How often do you use your towel for your shower? Are you a one-and-done type of guy, or?
No, definitely not.
So, all right, so let me ask you a question. When you use a towel, you take a shower, yeah. And then let's say, what do you do with that towel when you're done?
Absolutely not one-and-done, I agree with Jonathan.
Right, so let's say you put it back on the rack or leave it on the floor or whatever. You put it back. Now, how many times do you use that towel?
Many.
Yeah?
Yes, I do.
Until it's forcefully
you don't
taken
in the laundry.
Until it's forcefully
taken. No. Sometimes.
Until the cleaning lady takes
until
it.
Until someone takes it. Until yeah. Okay. All right. So here's my issue that I've been going through. I don't mind using a towel as long as it's not wet. Right.
If
it's
a
wet
towel.
Right, yeah. All right. So I won't use a wet. I mean, if it's damp, it's fine. I'll use
I steal
it
towels from all hotel yeah. rooms. So
I have. So over here in my house upstairs, there's like 10, 15 towels rolled up in the in the master bath. But I refuse to waste a new towel for a shower. In other words, I'll just use one that's on the floor. So, John, if you have a choice of using up, quote-unquote, using up one of your the towel you've used before, or do you take a fresh one off, or you say, you know what, I don't want to waste one of the new ones. I'll keep using the old one until someone forcibly takes it from me.
I would not use a towel if I've thrown it on the floor and picked it up, But I will reuse the same towel if it's been hung properly and it's dry.
It's dry, but so
it has to be dry. Because if you run into like a two-a-day shower situation and it's not enough time and the towel is slightly wet, that just does not work for me.
What about you, Blonder? What are you doing with the towel? Are you using a fresh one, or if you have one that's dry hanging there, you'll just keep using an old one until it's forcibly taken from you?
I would never waste a new towel.
What about you, Jordan? You look like a one-and-done type of guy.
Listen, we have someone who works in the house, a part of our family. If she grabs a towel and throws it in the laundry, I can't help that. But if it was up to me, I would say 2 to 3 times.
Okay.
2 to 3 times.
Yeah. Why, you would do more than that?
I think when I used to go to camp, I think I was sandwiched with two towels.
That's
I think
different.
I used one.
That's different. There are less options when you're living in a bunkhouse.
Well, I also had to deal with sand. I still used it.
Because you couldn't do laundry on your own.
Well, I didn't know
2 to 3 times?
Well, you throw it in a laundry bag.
Do you know that there's an environmental crisis in the world?
Oh, is there?
Oh, but
that's why here.
If I'm in a hotel, I will not reuse a towel.
Oh, yes. 100%.
Even if it has one of those modes.
I will use 6 at one time.
Yeah.
So is it more of a responsibility? Like, if it's my responsibility, then I'm conscious of that. But if, like, I'm being given 7 towels and they're taking care of it, then you'll just use always a new one.
Correct. I will use more squares in a hotel toilet paper than I will in my house.
Okay. I find myself sitting in this very fancy house. Over the years that we've known each other, maybe 20, 25 years now, you've had the same housekeeper yes. this entire time. Yeah. I see her all the time. I know Anna, and I would assume that she's pretty quick with washing towels. Is she not? So let me get into your mind. So why is it that you are wanting to reuse towels?
So I guess towels only have like a certain period of like life expectancy, an amount of times it could be like thrown
out. Okay, I'm going to pivot now. John.
Yes, sir.
John.
This was actually just getting good.
It was good.
That was the question of the day.
This is what happens.
It was a great, it was great.
I go in the shower.
I'm proud of you. However, there's a certain point we have to cut it off.
100%. I'm alone a lot during the day, and I always have a lot of random thoughts. So that was the question of the day. And
I'm wondering what Josh's answer is.
It's great. I don't know. He one and done for sure. Yeah. There's no question.
No,
about Josh.
No. He's two and done. In other words, he uses two towels probably.
And then he uses it for upper body,
yes,
lower body.
100%.
Yeah, I could see that. Okay, John.
Yes, sir.
You're in the hedge fund business.
I am.
Apparently, you specialize in volatility trading.
Yes.
Can you explain for the audience what that means? No. Can you? Why you don't want to? You don't want to let anyone in on your secrets?
I mean, sure.
Okay. When? So explain.
Volatility trading is, if I had to tell you if a stock was going up or down, I'm worthless. I have no idea. I'm just as good as like anybody else on the street. I have no idea. I have an opinion, but I could be right. I could be wrong.
Okay.
What I do specialize in is knowing if a derivative, which is priced off of volatility, is priced well, cheap, expensive, et cetera. When I find derivatives that I find are cheap, I buy them. And then I hedge them, hence the term hedge fund. That probably doesn't really mean anything to anyone listening, but
means a lot to me.
It means a lot. There was a time in the 60s, the 70s, even into the 80s, where it was a big thing for people from Chicago to work on the mercantile exchange, work on the floor. Guys were killing it. A lot of action, a lot of money to be made. You graduated high school in what year?
Yo.
1990.
Thank you.
Okay, 1990, the famous class of Daniel Altschul.
Studied his yearbook many
times. My auditor, by the way.
You went off to college, you came back and tried to work on the floor, but it happened to be the tail end of the era. John, what kind of disappointment was that, and does it still affect you today?
It was a big disappointment that, the streets at the Chicago Board Options Exchange were no longer paved in gold, but I learned a ton down there. And it set me up to eventually have a moderately successful business. So I have no complaints.
Did you ever study to get your nursing home administration license?
I did not. I've never worked in the nursing home business.
Okay. Back to Blonder. John, we're not done with you. We're coming back.
Who would want to hear
Blonder,
more?
Blonder, how did you wind up in Chicago to begin with? It's almost like you appeared out of nowhere. Well, explain it to the audience.
So, I mean, along the way, there were a lot of things that happened. But obviously, I was in the business in the nursing home in New York, and I've been traveling out of town. And somehow, somebody actually connected and introduced me to my current partner. Basically, he's like, hey, let's, he's originally from Chicago. And he's like, hey, let's go take a look at some deals. This is going back, a bunch of years ago. And we did. We flew out to Chicago and actually flew out to Des Moines, to Bettendorf, Iowa, up in your area over there.
Familiar to you, y'all?
One of the quad cities.
We were looking at some buildings up there and we weren't ready to do anything and at the time. And then a couple of years later, we came back. Another thing came up. We had just both bought houses. And finally decided that we're going to settle, in New York, bought houses and our families. We were, settled. And then all of a sudden.
Where in New York were you settling?
We were in Brooklyn.
Okay.
We were in Brooklyn in Flatbush. And called me up. He's like, listen, I got this deal, blah, blah, blah. At the time, I was just telling this story to somebody else the other day. Thank God my boss at the time did not give me a raise that I so dearly deserved. And I thank him all the time. He looked at me and he's like, well, you're not happy? I said, no, not really, not for what I've done for you at this point. And that was the end of the story. And we ended up just, deal came up and we moved to Chicago. I took a, nice pay cut and moved here and tried to.
Because an opportunity came.
There an was opportunity
Can you
came.
Explain, you got to.
Yeah.
Listen, we're not sitting at the Nick. Okay. So you want to just say, what does that mean? A deal came up.
An opportunity came up where somebody was doing a a deal with somebody else, one of our partners, Mr. Rothner, and
former guest
Ricky. A deal came up where we were going to take a building of his and operate it. And I had been an administrator in New York and a regional at some point. Basically, we just moved out here, and we had an opportunity to go out to Rockford, Illinois, and operate a building out there. And then a couple months later, another building came up, and then another one 6-8 months later, and so forth and so on. My partner and I both came here making significantly less money than what we were making. We were not making it, at that time, it wasn't as costly to live as it is today. I mean, right now it's just unaffordable for a younger person or for somebody that's not making, it's very expensive to live today. Sometimes I feel when I was making $35,000, I was a richer person than I am today.
But you weren't doing food crawls.
I was not doing food crawls. I couldn't afford food crawls. But the reality was that we took a significant, we took a shot and, prayed to God. And hopefully, that's really what happened.
And came to Chicago with how many kids?
At the time, I believe we had 2 kids.
And your wife was okay with the move? Or she was never really...
She's from Australia, right?
Yeah. So I'm actually going there this week.
For food?
Actually going there.
To Australia?
Yeah.
For a pizza shop. He's yeah.
For food?
I got to go check out some land over there. But
is she from Sydney or Melbourne?
She's from Sydney.
So what's that like? You like going there?
No.
No? Why not?
I mean, I've been there twice. It was a while back. It's a long trip. I mean,
is her family still there?
She has some family. Her parents are not there anymore, but they're in America. But she's got aunts, uncles, and cousins and things like that. But she wants to bring the kids over there and basically show them where she grew up, et cetera, et cetera. So she did not want to move to Chicago. My wife was acclimated tremendously in New York at the time. Mm-hmm. She was already, starting a consulting business with somebody and helping somebody out. She worked in a store, and somebody else opened up a store for her, that they wanted her expertise on, and she was actually going around to nursing homes selling jewelry out of the back of her car type of thing. We were hustling, She was making more money than I was at the time when we first got married, at least for a bunch of years. And
well, as she does now with her life coaching business.
That's factual, correct. She wasn't really excited to come here, but she took a shot and she said, "What the heck, let's just do it,"
Okay, and John, what was it like for you?
Wait, how many years have you been living here?
I've been here almost 10 years now.
Oh, nice.
We actually came in the frost of what it is now back in 2014.
The polar vortex.
That polar vortex. Yes. We came right after, the week after, so it wasn't negative 30. It was negative. It was freezing, and we went
that
to this.
A rough, a
we
rough
stayed
winter.
By somebody's house here, and we went to a shul, which was an unbelievable experience. I had never had that experience in Brooklyn, where I walked into a shul, and I felt so welcomed and warmth. And there was, beautiful Kiddush and singing afterwards. At the time, that was BCDE, and they were on McCormick over there, almost between McCormick and whatever it's called, whatever that other street is.
Aren't they in the same exact place?
No, it was a different, it was like a storefront on, where
the vape
kosher,
shop is.
Where Kosher Club, one of those places.
True.
Correct. Alav HaShalom, Kosher Club, that area. We went there, and it was an amazing experience. And I then moved into Chicago and moved to the Winston Towers, and I would walk every single Shabbos to BCDE at the time. It was wonderful. It really was. It was there was a camaraderie there that is unparalleled. That was unparalleled for many, many years until the last, till COVID, essentially.
And what do you mean by that?
It fell apart.
I've never dived in there.
No,
not once in my life.
I like the shul. I like the guys. I'm good friends with. I mean, so many of the guys, but it didn't talk to me as much anymore. My kids go to the cheder, and they most of the kids. I don't believe there was anybody else that sent their kids to the cheder there, and I felt like I needed to be a step. I needed to be a little bit more to the right so that I could that my kid could be it's like. We were talking today about opening a restaurant, and you open a restaurant so that you can make money. It doesn't mean you're going to make money. That means you can at least try to break even, So you always want to be a little bit more to the right so that you'll end up, even if you end up a little bit left, that's okay. So that's why we ended up making the move to across the street.
Well, I think it's a fantastic show, but I want to stick on that last point about being a little further to the right, so you end up a little bit, you know, maybe towards the middle or right. something. John, what are your thoughts about that? I know that you're coming tonight. We had to time this perfectly because you're coming from your daughter's Idacron basketball game. Correct. So talk to us about that win? Statement that Blonder made. You know, I just want to know how you grapple with that. Do you agree with that? Do you not? How do you live your life?
How do I live my life? No one's ever asked me that question. I mean, like, probably stupidly would be the right answer.
Why chance like Rambo, day by day?
Yeah, life is gutters and strikes, man. You know, you hit some good and you hit some bad. I mean,
yeah.
But what is Idacron bad? Oh, because my kid goes to Idacron. No,
I'm not talking about that at all. I'm just mentioning the context.
I don't know. I mean, my kids have gone to Hillotora, they went to Camp Mosheva, they went to Idacron, and I have nothing but good things for the most part to say about all those institutions. And I think, you know, my kids are on the derech, as they say. And
Will's doing great, no?
He's
got that engineering thing going.
I mean, he's a special kid. He's a serious kid. But he also, you know, like for his winter break, he went to learn in yeshiva for 3 weeks in Israel.
So. Unbelievable.
I want to tell you an interesting fact, and this is actually interesting, Jonathan, because Chicago, I believe, is the greatest city out there in terms of
food.
Definitely not food. In terms of the connection among the Jewish community, I don't believe that there's a place out there that exists like Chicago. And I used to hate Chicago. When I first got here, I was like, everything in New York, it sucks, blah, blah, blah. And it still sucks a lot, you know, but with certain things, with the food, obviously, really is just awful sometimes, although Crunch is really good. But the fact that there is no other city that has people that get along, whether you send your kids to Idacron, I send to the Weizmann Cheder, it's literally like somebody from Africa and Asia, right? I'm saying theoretically speaking, it's total opposites, yet we could sit at a table and have a great time and sit and schmooze and sing and cry and daven and laugh together. It's something that I gave a speech in Israel a couple of years ago about this to a whole bunch of people. It was after a Yarchi Kala with a whole bunch of guys that we were with, probably 50, 60 guys, and I was very much, my thoughts were that the city, the connection, we sit with, I hang out with Chabad people that no other places do, right? I mean, it's the connections between everybody in the city is something tremendous that doesn't exist out there. It really doesn't exist. And, you know, sometimes you got to step back and really appreciate that. I tell that to my wife and kids all the time. You know, forget about it that years ago was like one of those, okay, you go there because there's less, you know, you're not as cool as in New York. You don't need to have all being dressed up and all that stuff. It's not true. We're just as cool as everybody else. I mean, maybe we don't have the best herring. I mean, our herring sucks. You can't even call it herring. It's awful. It is terrible.
Hold on, Blonder. You know, it's a really beautiful thought. Did you feel that way when Rayleigh Bloomberg called the cops on you?
Yes. That's the beauty of it.
I float between, you know, like 3 to 4 shuls on Shabbos, and, you know, each one, obviously, you know, each one is different, but, you know, they're just guys, and some of them are to the right of you, some are to the left of you, but, you know, people are friendly, and people just, you know, you make connections and meaningful connections, and it's just like you said, you know, it's something here that, you know, you're not just friends with, you know, 5, 10 guys, you know, there's 50, 60 guys who, you know, like, you can...
And people will give their shirt off their back. If, God forbid, somebody, I'm pointing at Jonathan, but I don't mean Jonathan, but if somebody like Jonathan or somebody that has an issue or something like that, you know, whatever it may be, we're going to step up. I'm going to step up as part of my responsibility to this community, which I feel tremendously responsible to the community, you know, consistently. That's why I talk to everybody. That's why everybody in the city knows me, because I'm involved. Because you need to assert yourself.
Is it fair to call you an Askin?
Whatever the heck that means, but, you know.
Blonder, I'm sure that over your time, you know, you talked about Brooklyn, you talked about now, you hung out in Tanya upstairs
South
a little
Bend,
bit.
South Bend, Indiana.
South Bend, Indiana. I don't know about that.
Oh, that was a fun story.
I don't know about that. But let me ask you this. You said you have everyone's back, you owe the community, they have your back. Let me ask you this. You came here to Chicago. You and your wife both did not have family here. I know that your wife has a sibling here now. I had a Shabbos meal with them. Who's your first call if you need help? You get in trouble. Who's your first call to?
We didn't know anybody at the time.
No. Now, who's your first call?
His lawyer. What do you mean? He gets one call from him.
Probably Hal.
I wasn't talking about that kind of trouble.
Another former guest.
Who could you
Another
rely on
guest.
The most? Who would? Who's got your back?
Who's my brothers in Otsala, okay. Obviously.
Okay, not where I was going with that, but fine.
I was trying to see
who are you looking for?
Yeah,
it's like for Ricky. I don't know.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. He's too big time now.
Ricky is my first call. I call him probably as often as I possibly can. We're very close. The answer to your question is yes. I don't know how I missed that, but yes, he's my first call.
Okay. Let me ask you this.
Jordan, who's your first call?
My first call?
Barry.
No, my wife probably. I don't know.
Oh, that's...
You're talking about if I like got in trouble?
It's a cop out.
I don't know. I haven't had to deal with anything.
That's great.
Yeah.
What a life you have.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so, Blonder, I noticed something about you. Can I point something out?
Sure.
I don't know if it's obvious to you, but it's obvious to me. You are always, always wearing Otsala gear.
Correct.
Advertising Otsala. Is that consciously that you're doing that? I mean, on Shabbos, you're also wearing a Otsala coat, maybe?
No.
Okay.
No.
But anyways, you are a devoted Otsala member.
Yes.
Did that, you know, the second that you arrived in Chicago, were you doing that? Did that come from New York?
I've always wanted to be a Otsala member my whole life. I mean, I grew up with my youngest brother was sick, and he's still sick. And we had Otsala, and he had a lot of friends that were in Otsala, starting from, you know, all the big names in New York that ended up becoming very close with our family after being called multiple times. We had a lot of medical experience in our house.
Do you mind me asking
Sure.
what type of sickness?
He has a disease called familial dysautonomia, and he actually has his own podcast as well. He's a very famous kid with Thank You Hashem. He's into that, all that stuff.
We welcome all competition, even other podcasts.
Okay. Go ahead.
What that is it's a genetic disease. That's one of the Jewish diseases. With Darya Sharam test for, and that was what we grew up with. Mm-hmm. And so he many times had multiple near death experiences, practically death experiences, and middle of the night type of situations. That's all running into the house, trying to get it, not breathing, the whole nine. So we were exposed to that, and truthfully, it got me excited, always, in all aspects. I just loved it.
What do you mean by that?
Just the running, the helping, the lights and sirens, the respect that I would be giving to these people, because it's just a tremendous thing to get up in the middle of the night and go to somebody's house, for what, again, whether it be a serious call or a not serious call. It's a drain on life. It's really, really a drain.
Yeah. And how many children in this community have you delivered?
I can't discuss that.
Have you ever picked up a head?
I have.
On Sweet Avenue.
Howard Street.
That is correct.
You don't know about that, John?
I often say that I live here, but I don't really live here. This is another example.
Okay, John. Mush, why don't you tell John about the severed head that you picked up?
So it was not severed, but it was practically severed. I was getting to work one morning a couple of years back, and I see this like Uber driver drop something off at like 9 o'clock in the morning, and like all of a sudden like he I see him out of the corner of my eye, him going and like trying to make like a left somewhere, and the next thing I know I just hear this massive crash, and I see
right
this
outside
guy,
your window,
right at
this is
right in
front,
right
your office,
right at, yeah, literally, and this guy just and I see a guy flying, and then he like lands on like his tush. And he's like just sitting there, but like his head is like basically almost like practically off. And then he just like falls backwards, and obviously he's convulsing, and he was pretty much dead.
So what did you do? The second you see him in the air.
I ran to my car. You can see it on the video, actually. I think I ran right to my car. I saw him in the air, and I ran right to my car to get my bag. I got on my radio, notified my base dispatcher that I'm going to a call and need backup members for a motorcycle accident, which usually is very bad motorcycle accidents, practically like 80% fatal. I did what I could, you know, held, you know, tried to hold this guy the last couple minutes of his life. And it was a young kid and who had just run away because his father was, he got into a fight with his father, 17-year-old kid, right. And jumped into the motorcycle and, you know, from down the block over there in Niles West, you know, high school kid, and just, that was it. It's just, boom, life ends. We were talking about this a couple weeks ago when I was talking to Yol about it. It's just seeing, you know, while we were in Gaza over there, it's just things switch, you know, at the, in a moment's notice, you know. So
have you ever got to a Hatzalah scene where like I can't deal with this, but this is like above my pay grade, or you think you're like a surgeon and whatever needs to be done, you're going to do your best?
Listen, we do the best we can. It's you know, sometimes it's difficult. There's I've had actual saves of, you know, and I can be public about it because he's made it public many times. And I had a guy once that, you know, he swallowed a Romanian piece of salami and it got stuck. And, you know, it was a frozen, snowy night, and run to the house. Wife is standing outside screaming, hands up, come in, you know, run inside. And I just, you know, went in there as a big man and, you know, it was stuck. And he was bent over about, you know, he was you know, seconds away from passing out. And, you know, eventually that once he's out, he's out. It's not, nothing's happening. And thank God I was able to.
Heimlich? You did?
Yeah, yeah. And then sat right down and said, hey, would you like some salami? I got one question before we end. Being the son of the legend.
Yes.
How do you live every day?
First of all, it's a great honor.
We talk about Iris here? Or?
Yes. It's a great honor, great privilege. It was a lot more like not the pressure. It used to be annoying just because, like, when my father, who you're referring to, you go to show with and all that stuff, when he was mayor, it used to be, like, all the time, people like, oh, they had nothing to say. They'd just be like, so, what's up? You're, you know, blah, blah, blah. But no, it's great. I have a great relationship with both my parents, and
no issues with your father going to movies with your friends. No issues with that.
Not at all. In fact, sometimes it's been a long time, but I know that I could always, you know, go to a good horror movie with my father and have a great time. He's a great listen. We've got Stones tickets going in June, so we're looking forward to that and a lot of great experiences.
Get that bus ready.
Get the bus ready.
Make Nachum pay for it.
Well. Blonder, thank you so much for coming on, Moshe Aharon. And John, I will say I'm very energized by your presence tonight, replacing Josh. Usually we play a little like kind of like chill, calm song to end off the episode. But John, tonight I'm feeling the fire. We had a great time. This was fun.
John is a ball of energy.
Ball of energy.
Thank you, Josh.